Well, welcome back, everyone, and happy Friday to everybody. So again, as Lisa was saying, this is the second installment on our profitability study that we recently did. So the focus for my part of the session is going to be around the MSP model. So as you saw last week, can you hear? I'm seeing it. Jim, can you hear us? Just really quick, make sure technology is working. If you can't, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to assume you can hear me. Lisa, I'm assuming you can hear me okay, right?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Anyway, so this is around the whole managed service business model. Like we said, obviously Jeff covered some of the VAR model last time over a couple weeks ago. So, again, this is going to be focused on that segment. Okay, keep going. So three things we want to cover today. First is just a little background on what we're talking about. It's really interesting, as you all of you saw in the session, when we start talking about MSPs, that means different things to different people. So first off, we'll spend a couple of minutes talking about what we actually mean by an MSP, so we're really clear on what we're talking about. The second, I'll get into some of the details. So that's going to be a lot around kind of what the profitability looks like. Obviously, the drivers for profitability are significantly different for an MSP business, as well as the gross margins are different. And again, when we talk about the cost, the SG&A, that changes radically based on an MSP model versus a typical VAR or even a consultant model. And the last part of this, obviously, you want to try and connect the dots and say, okay, well, what does that mean to vendors, and what does that actually do? What does that actually do to impact you guys as vendors? So we'll talk a little bit about that. Like I said, we have time for questions throughout, so if you have questions, feel free to jump in. So let's go through the background first. So again, this is the second three-part series. Jeff, I think, talked a little bit about last week some of the kind of overall research that we did, and I think he covered in detail the VAR profitability piece. Just to remind you, though, this was a survey that we did in 2017, and basically it was trying to get a better understanding of what the state of partner profitability was. It was conducted with an online survey, and then we actually did 23 in-depth interviews with partners. And just to let you kind of get an understanding of what those interviews look like, I did quite a few of these, and oftentimes in these interviews, they would be bringing in their CFOs or their financial advisors because we really tried to get into the details. So some of these lasted 2 to 3 hours where we literally went into, you know, how are you categorizing these types of costs, where are you seeing revenue adjustments, et cetera. So we really tried to kind of get into the details as opposed to just send out a survey and say, tell me what your gross margins are and just take them for their word. We really tried to get into some of the details. Okay? Kind of a quick thing just to talk about the summary of what profitability looks like now versus how it used to look like. And when you start talking about the definition of success for companies, in the past we've always known it to be, hey, tell me what your gross margins are. Tell me how, you know, what your sales look like to new customers. Tell me about, hey, your professional services growth. And at the end of the day, tell me, you know, kind of your cash flow and your solvency. So that was great. And that was a good way to look at profitability. But that has now changed quite a bit. And more in the past, it was around, hey, are you a profitable business? Now many of the companies, many of the VARs, many of the solution providers are starting to look at it and say, well, wait a second, how valuable is my business? So that's great that I can drive a profit, but if I want to get out, I want to move on, I want to merge, I want to be, you know, acquire folks, I got to, you know, start to look more about how valuable my company is. So many of the partners are starting to look at how they drive not just profitable revenue, but revenue that drives value to their company. And some of the things they're doing, as we all talk about, and some of the things that have a huge impact against that are intellectual property. So when they're developing their own IP, whether it be services-based, product-based, integration-based, you know, if they own it, obviously that drives higher profitability. We've seen with the work that we did in the workshop, obviously monthly recurring revenue, depending on how well it's structured, obviously can have an impact. Obviously, you look at valuations when someone's being bought or sold. That can be a significant aspect of whether or not they value you as a one-time revenue, two-time revenue, et cetera. The other is around customer retention. So, again, the biggest part of any recurring revenue business is, well, am I retaining my customers? So if you just literally go in and get a customer and they, you know, every year there's churn, that does not do a significant amount for the profitability. So that becomes a big driver in what they're doing. Also, as you can see with a lot of the IoT things that are happening, a lot of the business and, you know, business transformation and digital transformation activities, you know, having a, you know, connection to the business side, the vertical part of the business, and that becomes a huge piece of what the of what they're looking at as being valuable. So they're trying to sell and not just be connected to IT, but actually be able to connect what they're doing to the rest of the business. And again, they're trying to diversify their services, so not just the technical screwdriver services, but also trying to make sure that they have integration services, software services, managed services, and things like that. Okay, so many of the companies are starting to look at, and same as us, look at this differently in terms of not just about being profitable, it's also about how valuable you are. The survey that we put together, or the, excuse me, the research project that we did, literally focused on three kinds of partner types. And we looked at these. Obviously, many partners are more than one of these. So what we tried to do is kind of get really focused on the pure play. So I'm going to be talking about the MSP piece, very specific to a pure play model. Obviously, when you, you know, as Jeff was talking about in the last session, you know, some of these partners are 50% or are 50% MSP, so that's going to look different than a pure play. If they're, you know, 70% consultant, 30% VAR, that'll look different. So we tried to kind of, you know, sort of separate these out so we can look at the business model of an MSP, and then you can kind of use that to blend in with what the rest of their business looks like. Okay, so when we started to look at that, when we went back on the survey, so how many of these folks are really, you know, kind of an MSP? As you can see, in 2016, this was from 2016 data. We did this in mid-2017. As you can see, a significant portion of these partners, right, 25%, consider themselves to be primarily an MSP. If you look at the green line, 21% consider themselves to have a secondary MSP business. So essentially what you're looking at here is that roughly about 45% of the community has a pretty significant portion of their business as an MSP. If you look at the revenue category, so what I'm going to mostly focus on here is the managed services aspect of that revenue, not the, you know, how much margin do they get on product services and product sales and things like that. Okay. The big thing you'll see is that, in general, most of these folks are growing, so that's a good thing. And what most of them will tell you that they're growing their business around the managed services model. We always get into this really interesting discussion, right? So when we talk about an MSP, I'm not talking about and just purely a partner that we deem to be an MSP. So this is basically what we're talking about is the business model, which could, you know, cover many, many different kinds of partners. Just about every partner type out there is trying to some extent add in a managed services business. The other thing that we get into is this discussion around, well, what do you mean by an MSP? So instead of trying to just categorize it based on a definition of who they are, we tried to set it up based on asking about what does their managed services revenue look like? So we try to put this into three main categories. And this, so one is resell. The second one is what we call partner managed only. And the third part is what we call partner owned. Okay, so what this is the breakout of their revenue. And by the way, one partner could have all three of these characteristics. So, for instance, the resell model is basically they are reselling somebody else's, typically a supplier, vendor, or service provider's, managed service, right? So that they're not actually doing the managed service. They're just selling it to the customer, and oftentimes it looks a lot like product resell. Some of the things that you can think of around that might be some of the managed print services where maybe they're not doing any of the work. They're just literally selling this managed service to a customer. The second one is what we call partner managed only. So essentially what that means is that the partner is managing the assets, but we don't care where they are. So they may be on a customer site, they may be in someone else's data center, they may be a public cloud. The point is that the partner is managing it. They don't necessarily own it. And the third is what we typically think of as kind of the hosting companies, where fundamentally what happens is the partner owns the asset. So maybe they're consuming servers in order to drive an infrastructure as a service business or something like that, that they actually own it and they're managing for the customer. We tried to put these into these kind of categories because we got into a lot of discussions around, well, what do you mean by an MSP? And it really was difficult to, you know, try and kind of, you know, put them in just one single bucket because they really are doing different things. So one of the things that you have to look at, too, is, okay, well, why do they have different types, right? And so if you look at it from an investment complexity, you know, skills perspective, and even risk perspective, you know, on the left side, that's a pretty low investment. Doesn't cost you a lot to basically be able to resell somebody else's offering. But if you want to build a data center that's offering an IaaS solution, then obviously that's significantly higher costs and higher risk, complexity, et cetera. And on the flip side, right, so then you start to look at your profit potential, right, and you start to look at on the left side, it's relatively low in terms of the overall profitability associated with resale. In many cases, you can kind of think of resale just like you would a product resale, whereas over on the right, I mean, ultimately at scale, that's where partners tend to get the highest percent or the highest gross margin percentage from a profitability perspective. Okay, so again, you know, think of it, this is how we categorize their revenue, not just a description of who they are. So that covers the intro part. Now I want to get into more of the details around some of the numbers and some of how this business model works. So first off, let's talk about the profitability factors associated with this business model. As we showed, and I'll go ahead and show this out. So if you look at the VAR business model, right, a lot of their business is very much predicated on the whole concept of product gross margin, right? So where did it come from? You know, obviously services margin is important as well, but a lot of times their business are very much focused on how much margin am I getting up front, what's the back end rebate, what's the back end margin, all those kinds of things. In an MSP business, while that is a piece of it, that's not a key driving factor. It's fundamentally, it's around kind of their ability to meet their SLA. So what that means is, you know, how many people do they have in place? How many techs do they have to manage a particular number of customers? If they can manage more customers, then obviously that's a better perspective in terms of profitability. If you look at their SLAs, how well are they able to meet their SLAs? That becomes a critical part of what their business looks like, which fundamentally will drive their SG&A or drive their service gross margin. Which is very different than, you know, we just looked at the consulting business model, where obviously the consulting business model, it's all around utilization, time and materials, being able to scope things correctly, being able to package solution offerings. So, you know, if you look at these different factors, you know, it very much is different based on the kind of business model you're talking about. So let me dive into some of the details around, you know, kind of what's driving these factors. In each of the various areas. So let's start with revenue. So if you look at and talk to an MSP and they start talking about, hey, you know, what are the factors driving your revenue? There's a couple of things, and these are the main things that we typically hear. The first part is they talk about, well, you know, how much monthly recurring revenue they have. So how much of it is based on this product, you know, product or resale versus how much of their business is literally based on, you know, how much monthly recurring revenue do I have each month that I go in? Which translates into annual recurring revenue, but that becomes a huge portion of what they're trying to drive to. Another main factor of their revenue oftentimes is based on how many services they can offer a particular customer. So if they're in there with one, if they're in with the customer and they're only offering one service, right, then that means all the activity associated with managing the service, managing that customer becomes more expensive. So obviously, if they can go and take one customer and add 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 services, whatever the number is, that typically can make a huge impact in their overall revenue. Customer retention is big too. So, you know, obviously, if they're continually having to re-up and re-sign customers and there's a lot of churn and they're leaving them, then that can be a huge part of their overall revenue perspective. So again, the more that they can keep, the more revenue that they already have in place without having to resell new ones. But obviously, eventually, you know, you have to be adding new customers, especially if you're in kind of the startup phase or new to this. You know, obviously, if you don't have a lot of MSP customers in the beginning, you know, trying to drive new customers is important. But it's not quite as important as you might see in a VAR model because a lot of times, you know, it's more around how much recurring revenue do I have. You know, how much, you know, can I add to their business? And then the question about making sure that I can retain them. So when you start to look at their SLAs and their SLA delivery, because we said that's a big piece of it, the first part that drives this is around their whole terms. So are they 24/7? What is it, their terms that they're trying to actually drive to? That can be a huge piece of their overall profitability. I'll talk about this in a second and get into the details, but whether they're offering a partner-managed offering or whether they're offering a partner-owned offering, that can be a huge part in their overall ability to deliver. So does this mean that they actually have to have people on site to handle this, or is this something they can rely on the vendors, et cetera? And another piece of this is, you know, how easily they can snap in and add vendor solutions to their offering. So obviously when they go to a customer, they want to be able to add multiple offerings, and what they don't want to have to do is have a separate and different way to manage all of this. So if, you know, if they are offering a managed service to a customer and they're working with a vendor that can easily add in and bill monthly, et cetera, that's a lot easier than if they have to go and say, okay, I want to work with vendor B, but they don't have good utility-based pricing. I have to do a lot to make that happen. Their ability to quickly and easily snap that into their overall offering becomes difficult, so that becomes an impact to their overall service delivery. When you start to look at their gross margins, so obviously when you look at their service gross margins, you know, what kind of gross margin they're making on a managed service obviously is a big piece of it. And again, whether or not this is something that the partner actually owns or the customer owns, so depending on what services is, that can be a huge driver in their overall gross margin. Per customer profitability becomes really important as well. I think you've heard this before, is that, you know, sometimes MSPs will get into this business and realize that some of their customers really are not profitable. That's why you see a lot of them being very focused on kind of consistent approaches, consistent solutions, because that makes it a lot easier for them to be able to work with particular customers on a consistent basis and have the same kind of technical support, technical operations, et cetera. If every single customer is running a completely separate and different environment, obviously that doesn't allow them to have economies of scale and basically be able to efficiently operate their data centers and their NOCs. The other thing is you start to look at multi-year versus single-year contracts. So are they able to actually, you know, lock up their customers in a positive way for multiple years, or is it every year they have to go back and resell them every single year? So depending, you know, obviously, you know, you can look at the way they operate, but typically folks that have multi-year contracts, that allows them to manage the account on a yearly basis as opposed to having to resell them on a yearly basis. You know, again, at the end of the day, when you start to look at, well, tell me how these companies really drive their profitability, it, in our opinion, it really focuses on two main areas. How much of it they're selling in a managed-only environment versus the ones that they own. And then you start to look at, well, what about the SG&A? What about the expenses and cost, right? What are the main things that are, you know, drivers around profitability in that area? The first one is around the whole concept of being able to be trained and certified on the various offerings. So this tends to be focused not just on the technical and implementation side, but also making sure that there's training and ability to understand this on the operational side. Obviously, marketing is important to them. Many of them tend to still be small if you look at the whole community. So obviously, vendor marketing funds and how they do that can be a huge piece of it. And the last one, which is, and we talked a little bit about this when we were together, the quality of products and services really makes a huge difference to these folks. So again, if they're, you know, as soon as they have to go out to a customer site and fix something because it's broken, the more that they have to do that, the more and more that impacts their profitability. They're really focused on being able to manage these clients, monitor these clients, and be able to have more of a proactive approach to IT as opposed to reactive. So if the products are of high quality, that allows them to continue to do that in a monitor-managed way. If the products have issues and there's quality issues, then they have to go out and actually, you know, fix these products and fix these offerings, which obviously that can be a huge impact to their profitability. I'm not going to go through these, but basically this is some terminology. So if you want to go back and kind of look at all the things that we just covered, here's descriptions of what they are so that you can share this with others and be able to explain it. So it's just kind of a terminology of what we mean by each of those offerings. So the next part, I'd like to just kind of go through key trends for each of these areas. So let me start with revenue. So in our interviews as well as our surveys, you know, these are some of the things that came back and said these are really kind of the key trends that are happening today. So number one, they really are starting to change their definition of success. Instead of just saying, well, this is how big I am on a revenue basis, they're really starting to come back and say, well, how much of my revenue is really monthly recurring revenue? That's becoming a big measure of success. For the most part, and I know this varies depending on which kind of partners you're talking about and how far along they are in their progression, but for the most part, cloud still represents a relatively small amount of their overall revenue, but it's growing. And again, that's different with some of the white label offerings around managed services and things like that. The revenue, most of the revenue, from what we can tell, is coming from the managed assets versus owning them. So while there's still, and I'll show you some numbers in a minute, while there's still a significant amount of revenue coming from partner-owned, the reality is that most of the revenue around managed services is coming from the concept of managing the overall environment and assets. And then continually in our interviews, you know, retention is almost the key to profitability. Without retention, most of these folks are not going to be able to drive the gross margins they're looking for to have a sustainable business. When we look into some of the SLA trends that we saw, one of the things that they've really told us significantly is that for them to really engage with a vendor, their expectations that they want to be able to buy solutions that are on utility-based pricing that are in line with how they charge their customers. No matter how it is, whether it be monthly, whether it be yearly, whether it be hourly, whether it be whatever they're doing, they're really looking for the vendors to be able to be in line with that and offer different kinds of subscription utility-based pricing that matches that. One of the questions that we were talking about, well, how important is professional services in your overall managed service business? Because, you know, part of it is they're trying to kind of be more focused on recurring revenue as opposed to project-based. But what we did hear back is it's actually really important. In fact, oftentimes professional services is really critical to them winning the managed services offering. And oftentimes they said it can be, as, you know, 60%+ of their deals actually have some sort of managed services involved with the, or excuse me, professional services. What we did learn from them, though, is this is, look, many of the partners out there that are really focused on this business model, what they kind of have told us is that, look, we're willing to do professional services, but we only want to do professional services as it relates to our ability to drive a managed services opportunity. So it's not just a, hey, let me go do the services and leave. I'm willing to do the services, but I expect it to be part of a bigger deal. So that's kind of their decision point as to whether or not they're willing to do those. We also saw, which was something that we kind of surprised us, this residency or, you know, staffing services is kind of becoming, was fairly common. So in addition to, you know, hey, I offer the service, they're also offering people to help with it. And for some of these long-term projects, you know, in many cases, we found that to be, you know, sometimes up to half of what they were doing in terms of their overall revenue. We also, we looked at a number of the partners were talking to us about their hardware as a service offerings. And so, you know, that's actually been creating some opportunities for them, even especially from a financing and leasing option. And what we're seeing is that there's a number of partners that are actually rolling that into their overall monthly service contract on a customer basis. So, for instance, just a simple way to think about that is we've seen partners that are saying, hey, here's your monthly fee per user. By the way, if you want a laptop to go with that, then it's an X amount more per month, and basically you have access to the laptop to use. There's other options, but that's kind of the simplest way to think about it. Then we spend time talking to them and said, well, tell us about, you know, kind of what's going on with gross margins. So is, you know, is it going up? Is it going down? Kind of give us the perspective of how big or small that is. And some of the things that we saw, number one is that the stability of the margin is still there. So this isn't one of those things where, you know, it's a declining margin opportunity. And the reasons they said for that is a couple things. One was around the quality and the ability to meet the SLAs. So, for instance, you know, by having a quality cloud environment or having a quality backup or having a quality software environment, you know, basically that allows them to keep the margins high because what really drives the margins is their ability to manage and monitor versus having to fix. Also, what we found is that there's a lot of folks in this business that don't totally understand how this works. So they have some good ideas, they have some thoughts, but it might be the first time through it. So really looking to outside folks to help them, think, you know, companies like Service Leadership and True Methods, HGG, et cetera, to kind of help them make sure that they're benchmarking their effectiveness, like in terms of what kind of pricing they should charge, what should they expect from a per user or a per, you know, kind of per environment kind of pricing, so they look at that. And again, my comment around some, you know, their margins on professional services, we were wondering if they were giving them away, because when they had the comment that says we're willing to, you know, kind of do professional services, but only to get a managed service contract, does that mean that they were, you know, discounting them to nothing? And the answer was no. That they, you know, found out they really still are targeting a pretty healthy margin on professional services, but that is a place that they would be looking to squeeze. In terms of getting into more longer-term managed services contract. I don't want to get into a ton of the product details, but obviously there were some solutions that were generating higher gross margin than others. Obviously, it, you know, can kind of come with commoditization. Some of the things that they talked about is, you know, MDM and virtual desktop management were some of the areas they were seeing higher margins. Disaster recovery, backup, still absolutely stable, but wasn't quite as high because there's probably, in the discussion we got into them is because there's more competition and things like that. So when we got into the overall gross margins, and so tell us kind of the trends associated with that, is that, you know, again, most of these folks are actually enjoying pretty high gross margins. They think that's a very profitable part of their business. And for those that have critical mass, so 20-25% or more of their business is coming from managed services, tend to have a pretty stable environment in terms of their ability to stay and grow their profitability. But again, when we talked, we said, well, what's the key to continuing this? And the main things is that they were saying, hey, I've got to be able to manage more of the environment. So the more that I can have a partner-managed environment is great. Many of them have aspirations because they see the margins associated with more of a partner-owned environment. In our perspective, the reality is there's not a ton of partners that are really going to be able to do that because the cost associated with it is fairly expensive. So we tend to see that kind of being a relatively flat market for the folks that, you know, already can do that, whereas the folks that, you know, do them partner managed, we see that's where primarily most of the growth is coming from. Not all of it, but most of it. We also asked them, so on the flip side of this, we said, well, tell us about your costs, right? What are some of the, because obviously the second part of profitability is, well, what's it costing you to deliver it outside of the cost of goods sold? This is more on the expense side. And again, one of the things we talked to them about is, well, tell me about your investment in data centers. And what we found is that many of them, because of the high cost of that, unless they're already in that business, it's very difficult for them to get into that. We went through and looked at marketing investments. And again, remember, you kind of have to separate different partner sizes. So some of the big partners, this probably isn't true. They have actually really good marketing organizations. But in general, the investment was still relatively low. And we did talk to them about that. And the purpose, the focus around that, and again, depending on vendor MDF, but one of the discussions we had is, remember, when I'm selling a managed service, right, essentially what they're selling and marketing is a relationship with them, kind of a marriage, as opposed to someone that's just selling them or reselling them a product, which is kind of more of a one-time, not a one-time thing, but it's transactional. And they realize that the vendors are more the ones responsible for the product, whereas when you're selling a managed service, it's a lot more the managed services provider is the one that they're holding completely accountable for the entire thing. So the way you market them is a little different. It's less around the products, less around the vendors. It's obviously more around their ability to execute, their ability to deliver, supported by their fantastic vendor relationship. But they play a bigger part of it, which means more referral and those kinds of things. We talked to them about, because many of them talked about having a help desk component of what they did. So we were trying to figure out whether or not, well, is that something that you actually have built? Or is it something that you're working with other partners? Reality is most of them said it's their own payroll, not outsourced. But most of them said that is a core part of what they do. The last piece of this, and there's a lot of activity in this area. So this whole concept of being able to automate services, unfortunately, is actually a relatively significant investment for them. But they are really looking at platforms that really go beyond what they currently have. Give me an example. So you know about the RMM tools and the PSA tools. Many of those vendors are really starting to make greater investments, not just to be able to manage their typical MSP environment, but also to manage cloud environments, public cloud environments, private cloud environments. And so they're really, and again, the only way that they can be really good at this is through automation. So many of the partners are really looking at, do the tools I have, are they working? Do I need to look at other tools? Do I need to invest more in the ones I have, et cetera? So I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, but that's a big area where they believe they can cut cost if they can have greater automation in the investments and the services they're delivering. So let me talk a little bit about revenue and profit. So just to give you, I won't spend a lot on this, but this just to give you a look of what the revenue mix is so you can kind of see this. So for the pure play model we looked at, the MSPs were primarily focused on the service side of this. And if you look at the service, on average, 72% of their business was coming from services. And of that, 69% was basically coming from managed. So then if you take a look at that and say, okay, based on that, well, how much of your revenue is coming from resale, partner-owned, or partner-managed? And I'll show you a deeper chart on this in a second. But as you can see, you know, partner-owned and resale are smaller aspects, and roughly two-thirds of the revenue is coming from a partner-managed environment as opposed to an owned or resale environment. When we ask them which solutions, these were some of the ones that they mentioned. So networking infrastructure, obviously, still a big part of the top-selling managed services, help desk, virtualization, backup. Those tend to be the ones that we see the most. Obviously, application services are significantly less, but many MSPs believe that's an opportunity for them, especially as it relates to cloud and SaaS-based offerings. And again, we talked about the majority of the revenue is coming from this partner managed environment. And essentially, like here's a question, it says that roughly 25% of the recurring revenue is 25% of revenue is coming from recurring versus 75% is project-based. What we found is that literally you kind of have to get to about the 25 to 30% in order for them to be able to actually have a viable and ongoing business around managed services. Because what ends up happening is they get into that 25 to 30% range, and that it fundamentally becomes what's able to cover their costs associated with it. But again, so if you look at, you know, the percentage of revenue for each of these models, 21% came from resale, 61% came from partner managed, and 18% came from partner owned. When talking to the partners to get their perspective, we kind of got their, you know, summarized their viewpoints on some of the revenue trends. And so, kind of again, the first one, and I talked about this already, you know, how quickly and how well they're growing their monthly recurring revenue is really, really important to how they're kind of evaluating what their business looks like. Professional services is important, but again, oftentimes it's only relevant in the pursuit of their managed contracts. Again, 30%, you know, kind of critical mass is sort of deemed around 30% in order to really have the business processes, the business models, the infrastructure, as well as the people to support a true MSP environment. And again, the majority of the revenue is coming from this partner managed. Primarily, we believe, and basically based on discussions with them, it's because it's pretty difficult for them to invest in partner-owned assets. Obviously, they'd like to do that, but you know, being able to make that investment oftentimes is pretty difficult. And I think you saw that with some of the financial models we showed you relative to how much money they're making and how much investment dollars are out there available to them. One of the things they did talk to us about in terms of, okay, well, tell us from revenue perspective, you know, what do you think are some of the major areas that you need to get, you know, help from or focus from the vendors? And, you know, pretty much all of them started really talking about, look, in order to be able to play in this game, I have to be able to take the vendor offerings and snap them into my MSP environment, whether that be integration into my remote management and PSA tools, whether that be the way I bill, the way I contract, and the way I support the customers, being able to kind of fit all that together and flow it through seamlessly, that's one of the biggest things they talk about. Because if they have to go out and, well, I got to change it a little bit and I got to recreate that to fit into what I'm doing, the more they have to do that, the more difficult it becomes, and obviously the less margin they can generate from it. The next part, let me switch into kind of the gross margin side of this. So the way to look at this chart, so this is, again, remember, we're talking about the MSP model, so their margins on what they sell might be different than the community at large. but you look on the left side, this is basically their product resale. They still do product resale. And some people think that that's not what they're doing because they basically own the assets, but the reality is they're still doing quite a bit of that. That becomes part of what they offer. It's not a core major piece of their business, but definitely they are reselling products, and this is what their margins typically look like. When we get into the gross margins associated with their services, so in general, right, overall, they're kind of in the 40-45% gross margin for their overall services. Cloud, actually, if you look at their cloud resale business, this is basically them reselling other people's clouds. Those services, are anywhere from 6 to roughly 23-24%. On average, it's probably about 17%. So if you then kind of move over into – and professional services, you can see, is still – that's a pretty good chunk of their margin. So they still, are profitable in professional services. It's not like they're giving it away. But what's really driving their business, again, is this whole concept of their, partner managed, right? So if you look at it, they're generating on average gross margins of close to 50%, right, from their MSP managed only business. They still get, in some cases, they get pretty high resale margins. On average, it was 25%. We think that's a little bit high because there's some of these folks were doing some old white label offerings that they had in place where they were getting really high margins. The reality is most of this tends to look a little bit like product resale. And if you look over here to the far right, you can't see this, but basically this number goes all the way up to 100%. Because there's some folks out there that have assets that they've fully depreciated, and it's a very small amount of management for it. One of the folks we talked to actually owns a fiber network. This is where he was literally getting, as part of his overall managed offering, somewhere around the 90% margins because he's had it for so long. So, and you can see down here, some of it's really low, right? And typically what we find is that's because they haven't gotten a critical mass yet. So they made the investments. They're driving revenue, but again, there's a lot of cost associated with it, so they haven't gotten there. So although it roughly is about the same on average, the potential in a partner-owned model is higher. But again, our view is that there's a lot of partners that truly can't get there because it's just going to cost them too much to do that. So some of the trends we saw on the gross margin side, not the revenue side, is again, typically the MSP resale tends to look like product resale to them. And there's some exceptions to that. Some of the white label offerings and some of these specialized VoIP or security offerings, those can be different. But in general, the reason I say that and the reason I think this is important, because I do and have spent time with a number of vendors that talk about, I want to go to the MSP market. And what I want to do is offer them an opportunity to resell my managed offering, which can be great, that's fine, but also they have to recognize that that's not necessarily the core profit driver for an MSP. So this becomes a secondary or an attach or potentially a starting point, but ultimately if they're going to drive to 40, 45, 50% overall margins, they're not going to get that from reselling. Fundamentally, they're going to have their own services or services IP on top of that. Again, the partner-owned assets drive the highest margin, but many are unable to actually get there for a couple of reasons. One, it's expensive. The other is, is it really differentiated? So we've gotten into some of these discussions with some of the partners where they say, hey, really interested in doing that, but, can they really offer something that's different at a price point that's scalable? We have seen more, hardware as a service. Many of the partners did talk to us as this is becoming more viable from a variety of perspectives. And then, obviously, this whole integration of the cloud, being able to manage SaaS offerings, being able to manage hosted offerings, that's becoming a really critical component of their overall go-to-market. And because it's the customers require that, so therefore, how does it all fit together? Looking at how they manage their customers, I actually had a demo the other day of a ConnectWise offering where they actually can go back and talk about the cost associated with each of individual customers. So they can go back and say, well, how many tickets, and this is across the entire portfolio of solutions, how many tickets were basically for this particular customer, and is there do we have a problem there? So what's happening is they're able to go in and kind of manage these customers, and there's a couple things. One, fire them, which that doesn't always happen, but that's kind of sometimes what they talk about. I think the other is to address consistency issues. So if there's a reason that, there's a lot of tickets or a lot of a lot of support for a particular customer, they can then go in and have the visibility to say, well, what's really going on here and how can I go off and how can I fix it, either through standardization or account management or something like that. The other thing we did ask them about, and this is around their SG&A, and I think this is really across the board, so there's nothing really major we saw different from many of these. We saw partners came back and said, 43% of the partners came back and said that longer selling cycles was probably the one thing that increased their cost the most. In my interviews and discussions, there's a couple of things for that. What's happening now is many of the customers are looking for multiple options. You know, what if I just upgraded my current situation? Well, what if I went to a cloud-based offering? Well, what if I went to a hybrid-based offering? How does all that work? Obviously, when you're considering multiple options, that can make sell cycles take a lot longer. They also stated that, look, you know, more people are getting involved in the decision-making process. So, you know, having to sell to different people, that was a big piece of it. And then, obviously, kind of predictable customer demand. Obviously, if you have, you know, utilization issues, that can be a big problem in terms of your overall cost associated with that. Okay, so that kind of gives you the background, gives you an understanding of what's happening from a profitability perspective. Hopefully I was relatively clear as to what the drivers are and what the trends are. Let me now turn and talk about, okay, well, what does that mean to you guys and what does that kind of, you know, what are the levers that you can focus on here? Again, there's lots of detail in here, and actually if you get the report, there's a lot even more detail. But what I'm going to try and do is focus on kind of the key things in each of these areas that you can kind of focus on. When we talk about a partner P&L lever in terms of sales velocity, so what is some of the things that you can do as a vendor? Number one, utility-based and consumption-based pricing. That to us is probably the biggest thing, and obviously the partners told us that. You know, trying to kind of, you know, this is no longer a nice to have. It's starting to become table stakes. So if you don't have these kind of offerings that snap into what they do, oftentimes they're going to basically say, look, I can't sell the offerings because it's too difficult to get my sales guys to do it. It's too hard to add in. I don't have predictability. Another thing was around marketing visibility. So basically being able to, you know, kind of share with the customers who is in the environment. In terms of delivery, I think a couple of the biggest things they talked about, one was, hey, as they're starting to basically build out these, you know, next-gen services, so what are the new services they can offer, they're just asking for more IP. How can you help, you know, us have more IP related to that, whether that be from helping them with integrations, giving them toolkits and things like that. And then the other that they talked about was, hey, we're having trouble sometimes getting access to the right talent that can help us because we're not just implementing, we're operating, so sometimes the programs are set up for vendors to support them as they're building it out, but from an operational perspective, oftentimes that can be even more important. You've heard us talk about this before. This whole linkage to PSA, recurring revenue tools, automation tools, really, really big. And what I'll tell you from what I hear is that from discussing with many of the partners is obviously each of the individual vendors have their kind of tools that they use. There's some cross vendor solutions out there, distributions involved in this. This is an issue that they're all grappling with. So, you know, having to make sure that the tools are integrated and supported, big piece of that. Financing for some of the things when they start to look at, you know, build out some data centers, you know, different kinds of financing to help them is obviously important as well. When we talked about this, and I think this is more of a general statement, honestly. So when they talked about, well, what about enablement and support, obviously they talked about, hey, making training and certification more affordable. I bet you've heard that before. The one thing that I will tell you that we did find out in this area, it wasn't just about affordability, but it was about relevance. So basically making sure that the training that they're being asked to take and asked to do is more relevant to what they're doing, and not asking them to, you know, participate in training that doesn't help them drive their MSP business. It's more related to another part of their business. Another thing we got into some discussions, which were around kind of this whole concept of, well, there are all of these marketplaces out there now, right? So many of the MSPs are saying, hey, how do I take advantage and what do I need to do in terms of working with the various marketplaces? We recently did some work with a security company around kind of, well, what role are distribution marketplaces? So this is the Ingrams, the Synnex, et cetera. What kind of role are they playing in terms of helping partners understand what's available, helping them understand, you know, which one they should buy, and helping them understand which ones they should recommend. So honestly, it was actually quite higher than we had thought. I think what that basically tells us is that these marketplaces are getting a lot more traction. Many of the MSPs are going there, say, okay, well, which of these solutions out there, you know, fit into my overall model? Which of these ones, you know, connect to my preferred PSA and RMM tools? By going into these marketplaces, they're actually able to figure that out, as well as, you know, it obviously simplifies billing and support and things like that. But here's what I'll tell you. Our perspective is, I think, not just the distribution marketplaces, but we need to be thinking broader than that. And I think the way I would categorize this is broaden the thinking to be anybody that's in this game that has a cross-vendor kind of scenario. And let me give you a couple. Amazon is one. So you might not think of them as a distributor, but obviously if you go into their marketplaces, you know, customers can purchase a plethora of solutions that are snap-ons to the Amazon environment. Amazon actually has their own channel programs. Think of them as a vendor, right? And what they're doing are kind of almost a distributor as it relates to other products. And they have been starting to become more and more sophisticated. So if I'm a customer, I go in and I want to buy, let's say, a security environment. To secure my Amazon environment, I can purchase that through Amazon, but Amazon has gotten to the point where they can actually report back to the vendor, and there are some vendors that are giving partners credit for those particular sales. So that's pretty innovative. You can also look at some of the things that ConnectWise is doing. This is a bit broader than just the offerings. But obviously, you know, what their whole vision is they want to be that centralized hub to manage a customer across multiple environments, whether it be cloud, on-premise, and whether it be one vendor, two, three, or five. So if you look at what they can do, you can, as an MSP, I can go in and I can look at a customer, I can provision for that customer, I can bill for that customer, and I can get the support for that customer across multiple environments and platforms. So look at, you know, obviously distribution marketplaces are important, but also might want to look at some of the big cloud provider marketplaces as well as some of these cross-vendor integration toolkits. Another thing we heard from them is, well, how are they getting help? Because, you know, how do they know what to do? Where are they looking for information? What is it that they actually need? And what we're finding is the ones that are good at this are actually leveraging a lot of their peer groups and mentors. So whether it be kind of these, you know, actually, it was interesting. One of us said that they actually work with Deloitte, which is a fairly big consulting group, but they were working with them relative to their overall business model in terms of cost structures and things like that. I love the quote that they had. It's like, yeah, we brought them in. They ripped us for two straight years. We thought we were good, but not great. But what happened is through listening to them and understanding what they were talking about, they were really able to make significant changes in their business. Also, for some of you on the phone, actually, you know, especially some of the bigger partners, some of the bigger vendors are actually helping them to understand what they need to do, providing them the skills, the templates, the tools, resources, et cetera, to make this transition. Okay. Also, some third-party groups, kind of service leadership is one, HTG is another. That came in, for the ones that we thought were doing well at this, in almost all cases, they were looking to somebody to help them. So they had an idea, they had a vision, they had an idea of where they wanted to go, but looking at doing benchmarking and checking their math and checking their direction was actually a really important aspect to what they're doing. So anything that, if you've got a lot of partners out there that aren't necessarily good at this or doing well at this, you might want to think about, you know, hey, is something that we could partner with to kind of help make that an easier transition. So in summary, let me kind of talk about the key vendor takeaways. Again, I keep harping on this, but, you know, this utility-based, some type of utility-based subscription consumption model, again, that's becoming more and more where it's just table stakes. If you don't have it, it's going to be pretty difficult to compete. They're really starting to look at, many of the MSPs are starting to say, look, I'm kind of tired of all the various vendor ways to engage on this. I really want to look at it from a customer perspective. That's their vision. Obviously, it's not quite there yet, but they're really trying to say, if I want to be able and manage a customer environment, I got to be able to connect all these dots. So the integration for all these various tools and marketplaces, you know, from an RMM or PSA perspective, as well as the cloud providers, is becoming more and more important. The other that they talked about is, say, you know, can you help them understand how your offerings give them the ability to offer more managed services with your product line is becoming a really, it's becoming a competitive advantage for folks. So what I mean by that, you can go in there and say, look, not only can you just manage current environments, but we're going to give you the ability to manage future cloud environments. We're going to give you the ability and show you how to do that. We're going to show you how you can drive services on that and actually give them roadmaps and things like that and tools to do it. That can be a competitive advantage for you. There's a significant amount of program evolution that's happening. Some of the things I'll talk to you about, so if you think about some of the MSP models where it's more of a land, expand kind of model, obviously vendors are starting to provide more folks that are capable of helping the partners in that area, whether it be from a training and teaching them like to be lifecycle management folks, or whether or not they're actually providing those resources for them. Also, we're seeing a lot more architectural assistance where if you, hey, want to have a high-quality data center, how does that work? Going in and helping them be able to do that. We also are seeing changes within the support structures. So obviously in an MSP environment, they don't want to be treated just like any other partner or any other customer. The way they view it is when they call in, they're calling in on behalf of hundreds of customers that in a managed environment might be something that could affect them immediately. So they expect to have much stronger and more dedicated support. And the other thing that I would leave you with is that, you know, we're going to continue to keep advocating that, you know, we need to think about the MSP model not as a partner type but as a business model. If you look at any of the partner, not any, but most of the partners out there, they're trying to figure out how they add this element to their business. Whether it be a huge part or a small part, almost everybody out there is trying to figure out, hey, how can I have much more of a managed offering in terms of how I go to market? So with that, I think we have a few minutes for questions. That was a ton of information. And again, this material will be available in the portal. So, but before we let you go for the weekend, let me pause and see if anybody has any questions. Okay. Well, hey, Lisa, appreciate thank you, and thanks to everybody that was able to join. Again, this material will be available in the portal. Feel free to share with others, and if you have questions or need additional information, just get with Lisa or John. And myself, Beth, or Raleigh will be happy to get back to you and have further discussions. So with that, hopefully everybody has a great weekend. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye.
Thank you. Thank you.